Well, hello, everyone. As usual, welcome back to Deeper. It is so good to be here. Dan, it's great to have you joining us again. It's a crazy week in friendship. And so it's good to take this time and dive a little deeper into Scripture.
Yeah, it is, Austin. Yeah, good to be here with you and with everybody listening. Always look forward to our conversations and, yeah, just spending some more time talking about the Lord's Word and how He's speaking to us through it and specifically things we've talked about together. So
yeah, so we are kickstarting the Lenten season. That's what we did this last week.
Mm-hmm.
And it was the first sermon in a new series. And I know we talked a bit about this last week, but could you just refresh our memory? What was Sunday about?
Yeah, so a little bit different this Lent. Oftentimes we do kind of a six-week series going through this, but because we got Pastor Tim finishing up his ministry here, this is just kind of was a standalone, as it were. Psalm 25 happened to be the psalm that's in the church calendar for this week, the lectionary, we call it. And so I had looked at that several weeks ago and thought, oh, this is interesting, and read it. And what rose out to me, there's a few things, but I just saw how David began and end this psalm talking about shame and asking the Lord to not let him be put to shame. And it got me thinking about that topic of shame and being ashamed or embarrassed, disgraced, and how that's something we all deal with in our lives. We feel that at times. We feel ashamed. And the more I read into it, the more this is a very potentially destructive thing in our lives too. And so we talked about that in the context of the psalm, how David was no doubt dealing with this because of things that were going on in his life. He knew about it and knew what it was like to feel ashamed. And then just seeing how, even in what he's doing in the psalm, he's combating that. And talking to the Lord about this, we talked about his vulnerability. We talked about him saying, use the word submission, but really just, I need help, Lord. Mm-hmm. And then just the trust piece and just seeing the Lord is going to take care of this, hoping in him. And we talked, of course, pointing to Christ, how the Lord has become vulnerable himself, has entered into our shame and overcome it to give us victory as well. So, I don't know. It was, for me too, I can feel my own emotions in it because I think this is something that does hit us at different points.
Well, and shame is such a deep emotive experience for us. I think everyone can think of moments that bring them, that they feel ashamed of. I mean, even like some of my earliest, I remember there was one, I was in third grade, I think it was, and I was at a summer camp, and we went at the summer camp, and we were missionaries. I was a missionary kid, for those of you who don't know. We were on home assignment, so I went to the summer camp, and they're like, hey, there's a missionary kid in the audience. Like, let's talk to him, see what that's about. And they were just asking what it was like, and I knew that we were well off compared to many Ugandans. But being in third grade, I had no perspective for what this was like. So I, you know, went and happily told the entire crowd, you know, everyone there, all of the staff, a lot of family supporters even, that like, yeah, we're probably the third richest family in the country.
Right.
Not at all the case. And I felt very bad for years afterwards because I put my dad was in the audience and I was like, man, I really messed up with that. That's not representative. Mm-hmm. You know, that was a long-term shame thing that I've.
Sure.
So I think all of us have these things that they're ashamed of. And so it's a very personal topic.
It is. And it hits us at our core. I think that's what I was realizing too. That's why it's dangerous. But it is part of what we go through in life. And so how do we process this? Like you said, how do we make sure it's not that kind of explosive thing in our bag that's going to really cause damage?
Right.
So.
But at the same time, it can be helpful in small quantities. And actually, so as you were talking about what shame even is, it reminded me of this thing called cortisol, which I was a psych major in college, and so I spent a fair amount of time on neuropsychology. So we spent a lot of time talking about cortisol. What it is cortisol is this hormone in your adrenal gland, and it produces a response to external stimuli that'll regulate, among many other things, blood pressure and your metabolism. So if you have too much cortisol, you're too stressed out, your blood pressure is going to be really high, your metabolism is going to be all out of whack. But if you have too little of it, you're not going to have enough blood pressure. You might pass out. Like, there's a whole host. You know, it's one of these things that you need to have a very, very specific amount. Too much is too much is unhealthy. Too little is unhealthy.
Yep.
And it kind of felt, and we were talking about this a little bit before we recorded, but that kind of felt like the balance of guilt and shame on our spiritual lives. You know, we want just enough to feel bad for the mistakes we've made.
Right.
But we don't want this to be something that absolutely ruins our life because we can't get over how bad we are. I just thought, let's talk about that. What are your mm-hmm. thoughts to that?
No, that's good, Austin. You're right. I mean, if I never feel shame, it probably means I'm out of touch with my feelings. You know, I kind of would say we're kind of toward that more sociopathic kind of spectrum, right? And so there is something normal about having feelings of shame. And when a situation happens like the one you described or any number of situations that will come up that can bring this on, it's not abnormal to say, I feel ashamed I said that or I did that or this happened to me. That is quite normal, right? And it's off if we don't have that in some level. At the same time, like you said, it can become overwhelming.
Right, and that tends to be our leaning.
Right, and really dwell on us and then really cause damage or cause us to damage others. And so you're right. I think counselors often rightfully make that distinction between guilt and shame, and they're two different things, the way they talk about it, and how guilt is actually a very positive kind of feeling. It draws us toward the improvement you're talking about, like, I made that mistake. What do I need to learn? So that I don't make it again, right? And you usually deal with that, and then you kind of go forward, and maybe not dwelling on it, you know, so much. You're like, well, yeah, it happened. I made that mistake. I make mistakes, but I've worked to correct. Versus, I think I said in the service, you know, the shame over time says, I am a mistake. Mm-hmm. I am the loser. I am, you know, the one who messes things up. That identity piece that we start carrying around, and so. Whereas they said the correlation between destructive behavior and shame is very high, the correlation between guilt and destructive behavior is not. In fact, it points in the opposite direction because we seek to correct things that we say, like, that wasn't good. I said that to Austin. That was hurtful. I don't want to do that again.
So then is the main difference then is just that identity piece? One is saying, I am this. One is saying, I did this.
That's the clearest way that's made the most sense to me. And again, I'm not a counselor, psychologist, you know, trained in those fields. But from those who I've heard that are trained well and speak well, that's the way it's been put that makes the clearest sense to me. That, you know, taking that in, because we all make mistakes, we all have failings, things happen to all of us in our lives, but when it starts to attack us at our core and we start to take those things on as an identity, like, you know, of course I always make this mistake. That's who I am. Right. I mess everything up. Every situation I come into, then it really hits the way we're going to be and act.
Well, and what's interesting is we oftentimes will develop that shame based off of things totally outside of our control, too. Mm. So, like, you know, it's one thing to feel guilt and potentially shame if, like, this is a mistake I keep making.
Mm-hmm.
But oftentimes we feel shame come from a variety of sources completely outside of our control. So use the example of losing a job.
Mm-hmm.
That does not reflect at all on your character. It doesn't reflect, you know, it's just that's how it goes. Sometimes you lose your job. But we internalize that so much that we let ourselves feel shame from that. Why do you think that is, that we feel so much shame around things that are totally outside of our control?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, probably a few reasons. One might be, and you're right, there's lots of things that happen to us that are outside of our control, right? Someone insults us. You know, it's not like they're even speaking the truth there or you deserve that, but boy, it hurts. And you start maybe thinking that maybe that's true. That's who I am. Or you lose a job, and it might not even be competence-related. It might be, hey, we're just making cutbacks, and you got to go. Some of that, I think, is because of just in general in the culture. We talked a little bit in the sermon about just here's these perceptions of how I am to be, maybe even gender-related a little bit. Of, you know, and the guy, I go, oh, got to be strong, and, you know, everything's kind of, I'm tough, and, you know, if any emotion I have, it's maybe anger because I'm tough, And anything that pecks away at that, we start thinking, well, I'm a letdown.
Mm.
I am not strong. I'm weak. And that's all bad connotations in our mind. Or, you know, we said for women, maybe this juggling of all these things in my life and just doing that and looking good while doing it. And, well, the instant something happens, even if it's not my fault, that makes it seem that that's not the case, I start taking that on. It's part of it, too, is like we do aspire, I think, for the most part, to do things well, and we want things to go a certain way. And when they don't, it hurts. Losing a job, even if I know deep down that it didn't have anything to do with my performance or my character, just this happens. It's still something that hurts.
Yeah.
You know, I love sports and I follow that. And I know these athletes and free agency now and trades, it's all money related and people get moved around. And I hear them say things like, hey, I know this is just the business of the sport. But they also say, like, I wish I could have played here my whole career.
Right.
And so you know it hurts because it still feels like, oh, they said I wasn't really worthwhile. Mm-hmm. They didn't cut everybody.
Right.
And so I think we feel that, you know, it hits us, even if logically it shouldn't. Mm-hmm. We're not just logical people.
Well, then what are some, I guess we get into this with these next questions. How do we fix that? One of the ones that you talked about was vulnerability. And I got a huge soapbox about vulnerability. I love, if anyone ever is like, hey, Austin, you want to come and talk to this group of people? You can bet your bottom dollar I'm probably going to talk about vulnerability. I think it's so important for both personal and spiritual growth. But it's really hard to develop, and especially I've noticed among male circles.
Sure.
Vulnerability is something that among men is not looked upon very well.
Mm-hmm.
Why do you think there's shame around being vulnerable, and what can we do to practice vulnerability in our daily lives?
Mm-hmm. It's that strong, weak thing for guys.
Yeah.
It's viewed as weak,
yeah.
Right? You don't let anybody in, right? That's why I thought the phrase, you know, is my phrase. So, of course, I thought it was very smart. But, you know, just that we have to, in order to shed some of our shame, we need to be willing to shed some of our armor.
Mm-hmm.
And I think for me as a guy, that can be, you know, I got my candy shell, right? You know, like an M&M around me. That's going to protect me. And we know better than that, but we keep that wall up. We don't want to let anybody know maybe we're struggling with this. And and then what often happens is it gets so far down the road that we're way down the road of maybe this addiction or this destructive behavior or, you know, kind of fighting with, you know, others in a way that we shouldn't be. And so I think that in our culture especially, but probably in many, that piece is hard for us to overcome.
Yeah,
to be vulnerable. As males, especially.
Right. Yeah.
And that being said, that's why we talked about starting that with the Lord, because, hey, he's not going to go gossip about me. Like, hey, you won't believe what Dan told me the other day. Now, this is a safe place.
Right.
Who knows everything? He knows everything about me, right, already. Mm-hmm. So I'm not telling him anything he doesn't know, but it's just good to voice that. But then the encouragement of, is there someone else? You know, maybe it's starting with a counselor because, again, there's a protected space there.
Yeah.
Or maybe it is your pastor, or, you know, because, again, there's a protected space there to say, hey, this is just between us. But maybe there is another relationship, someone that you know is not going to push this back in your face and say, come on, Austin, come on, Dan, you know, how can you? But is going to say, they're going to be empathic.
Yeah.
They're going to say, I get it.
And I think what's really important with finding this person is also doing the self-examination and saying, okay, am I someone that people can feel safe being vulnerable around?
Mm-hmm.
Because if I'm not someone that people feel like they can be vulnerable around, that's going to make it so much harder for me in turn to find someone to be vulnerable with.
Right. And in a church community, boy, that's the ideal, right? Where this is a space for that. There's always someone I can go to. And yeah, I know we're not perfect in that. I know even as a pastor, that's not always a case where someone would feel that with me. But you hope across the spectrum of the church that there are people we could talk to and know that we can say, boy, this happened to me. I lost my job.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just feeling just like a less than, you know, to put it that way right now. Or, you know, my marriage is struggling. Hurting, or you know, someone's been through divorce. I'm just struggling with my identity in the midst of that. And for someone else to say, yeah, no, I understand that you would feel that way. I can empathize. I mean, it just, that's one of the things the counselors talk about too. Empathy really attacks shame and the drastic, more destructive elements of shame, because when you know it's not just you, that takes on that lie of the devil, which says, no, Dan, you are these negative things. And that person saying, no, I've struggled with that too, says, oh, it's not just me. And this is something that's real for a lot of people. We all struggle. And so you're right, to be a person who can offer that as well as being someone who's comfortable going there with others. And hey, I need work in this too.
Oh, yeah.
It's not always easy. You know, we want to look like we have it together. And, but there's got to be spaces because it's just,
right.
In some ways, the weaknesses can't be worked on until we admit them.
Right. Either, right? Yeah. Well, and it's so hard to also practice vulnerability on a daily level because sometimes we feel like we've got to go all or nothing. Mm. It's like, you know, it's the classic is like, you know, how's your day? Well, it's super awful.
Right.
It's like, okay, that's not necessarily, but you know, there's a space to say, hey, listen, you know what? It has been hard lately, but I'm, you know, finding joy in the Lord or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And just taking the time to have moments of vulnerability that don't have to be completely out of left field.
Right. Just dip our toes
but
in
just
at least,
dip your toe. You know? And the thing is, the more you dip your toes in vulnerability, the easier it's going to get to go deeper and deeper into vulnerability. The more you practice, even the small things like, you know what, I'm struggling this week, but I'm glad to be here.
Mm-hmm.
That's a big step. And really, for me, I've noticed as I've done that in the last really 6 years since I started this practice, like, man, it's made it a lot easier for me to feel vulnerable with people because I'm in the practice. But that's a habit that's so hard to form.
Yeah, and there's some wisdom, right, and when maybe you're sharing, like you said, you know, in front of a whole audience in a particular context, maybe not the best space to do something like that, but maybe there is, you know, I tried to venture a little bit into that, and it's tricky as a pastor sometimes. Where do I go? And but just to say, like, hey, I know in my role as pastor, as, you know, in care matters, in, you know, preparing for sermon matters, there's plenty of times that I'm failing, and I look, I'm like, I could have done that better. And I have to be wary of how that can attack my identity too, not just as a pastor, but as Dan Kinnis, right? And I think you're right as well that we got to find some space to practice this. And that's why I think, the place to go is to the Lord first.
Because 100%.
We're not going to find an easier spot to do that. You know, he's good. He's merciful. David recites all these things about the Lord. That's why he's there writing this psalm, because he knows at the end of the day, there's no one else he can trust like he can trust the Lord. And so that was the challenge, too, of to do that, we need to talk to him.
Right.
And I need that reminder, too. Like, it just doesn't happen like this. Like, I need to take time to talk to the Lord and make sure I'm relaying even my sins before him.
Yeah.
So maybe that's a place to start. You know, it all points back to that sinfulness and brokenness that's in the world, and we all have that. So vulnerability is a huge thing. Yeah, I don't know if there's anything more you want to say about it, but it is. It's important.
Oh, it's so important. I could go on for days and days and days about vulnerability. So I'll just say, if you ever want to talk about vulnerability, come find me, and we can be vulnerable about vulnerability. I'm so here to have those conversations.
Lots of aspects.
Lots of aspects. Well, and I think, and one of the things I love actually about deeper as this format is that I get to be vulnerable and ask a lot of questions that can be really hard for some folks.
Mm-hmm.
And so I love this space as a practice of vulnerability. And I think just for anyone listening, like, asking questions is in and of itself a huge act of vulnerability, because it's admitting, I don't necessarily know everything. Let me ask someone, let me humble myself and say, hey, I want to learn from you, and then take the time to actually learn from someone. I think that's a huge... Asking questions is one of the best ways you can ever have to practice vulnerability.
Yeah, it's really good, Austin, because we see that practice in the Psalms all the time. You know, David or whoever's writing the Psalm, asking questions of the Lord. Where are you? What are you doing here? Will you forget us forever? I mean, he's asking for help in a way. It's a different form of question. But you're right. That's a really good point. Asking a question is vulnerable because we're saying, I don't know.
Yeah.
What's
it's like,
going on?
I don't know, and I want to hear what you know.
Yeah,
you are important enough to me at some level that I want to hear what your thought is, and that's pretty. It's a humbling experience, which is great. Which actually ties right into my next question, because the next point was on submission, which was fascinating discussion. I feel like it ties in a lot with our discussion around anxiety as well, but we don't in our culture today, we don't really look upon submission as a positive trait.
Right.
And, you know, in Christian circles a bit more, but even in Christian adjacent circles often, I'll find, you know, people talking about, you got to be the alpha male. You got to be, you know, you got to be right and you got to be aggressive about it. And that's not necessarily something that I feel lines up very well with how we're supposed to practice our faith. Mm-hmm. So I really appreciated you bringing this up, as this is a critical element of vulnerability and of dealing with shame, is just saying, hey, I want to put you first, whether that's put God first or put someone else's needs first. I just really, really appreciated. I don't really have a question for that. I just loved this point.
Yeah. And I struggled with what word to put there, because you're right. Submission has a lot of negative overtones, for better or for worse. I thought, do you put the humility there? What drew me, that David just comes and he's asking for help. And in doing so, he's saying, I'm coming on my knees before you, Lord, first and foremost. And that's probably where this goes back to, that when we talk about submission, it all starts with our relationship with the Lord. Submitting, saying, you're God, I am not. You're creator, I'm creature. And so I depend on you every single day. And that's hard enough for us. On paper, it sounds easy. Like, well, of course.
It's like obvious.
That's who God is. But we have a hard time with that. And in our culture, maybe because of some of the misuse of authority and power, I feel we're in a time now where nobody wants to submit to anybody. Mm-hmm. Forget roles that have been in the past. I mean, we've talked about, in general, authorities looked at so differently. No one's just saying, well, you're in a position of authority, so I'm going to treat you with respect. And so it's a struggle to say, what does it look like to be someone who is willing to humbly seek help from someone else, first and foremost with the Lord, but even, you know, if I'm coming to you, forget our positions, but just to say, hey, Austin, I need your help with this. I have this question, or I'm struggling with this. I know you've dealt with it. There's always some submitting humility that's involved with that. And you're right. I think we struggle. Maybe it's, again, harder for males. I don't know. I think it's tough across the board. And so it's probably good to see how that, I think, what did I say on the screen? It's hard to receive help if we don't ask for it.
Right.
Which is an obvious statement, Captain Obvious there. But it's true. If we are really dealing with identity attacking issues, if we're going to get help with that, we're going to need to ask somebody.
Yes. And
be a little humble
about
it.
Well, and for the sake of vulnerability, to demonstrate that, whenever my wife had to leave the country, our immigration fiasco was first starting off, she had to leave, and she was getting kicked out of the country right during the start of all of COVID. Everything was really crazy. I was in the middle of my senior year of college, so I was finishing up my theses, all of this stuff. It was a crazy, hard time. And for a while, I just remember being so frustrated because specifically I had immediate family members who it seemed never, like, they reached out to say this is hard, and then never. And I was like, why aren't they offering to help in any way? And I realized I never asked. I never let this be a place where I could let them love on me the way that they wanted to love on me, because I never said, hey, can you come and support me? I'm really vulnerable right now. I'm really struggling right now. And that's one of my regrets from that time, a time when I was like, I did not have the vulnerability and the submission to say, hey, I need help. I don't know. Again, that's just one of those things that, like, people can't help if you're not willing to ask.
Yeah. Yeah. Thanks for sharing that. It got me thinking too that, as we are maybe in a place where we're not the one struggling, but we can empathize and know what it's like because we've been there, this is where the full picture comes in. Like, it might be hard for that person to ask for help in that moment because they're dealing with shame. And so just to say, like, I might need to be more proactive on the other end, just to offer it. And
exactly.
And maybe there's wise ways of doing that. Sometimes if we'll say, hey, if you need anything, let me know. And your response almost always is going to be,
yeah, sure.
I'm fine. Whatever. But if I say, Austin, I know you went through this. How about I bring you dinner tomorrow?
That's much different.
So maybe some of those specific asks for help can be, that would be helpful.
Well, and with this, as with so many of the things we talked about, and deeper with so many of the character traits we try and grow as Christians, it's so important that we look at, okay, how do I practice this? Mm-hmm. And how do I help other people practice this? Mm-hmm. How do I practice receiving help? And how do I help others practice receiving help? They can't receive help if there's no one willing to give it.
Right.
And so it's one of those things that requires a lot of self-examination and mm-hmm. a lot of examination outside of yourself.
Sure.
And I'm like, yeah, Captain Obvious, but also, like, that's really important, I think.
It is. It is. And even coming through things, you know, when we go through times in our lives that are difficult, and it, of course, we talk about that in our relationship with the Lord and seeing how he's been present and helped us, and but also seeing what was helpful to me from things people said and did, mm-hmm. And not going into that seeking, like, oh, this person did it wrong, and now I'm going to hold that. That's not what we
no,
want.
No, not at all.
But just to say, like, oh, that I want to practice these things that were helpful so I can help others.
Right.
Like you've talked about in matters of immigration, you had personal experience, of course. Like, you know more of what was helpful, what wasn't. Mm-hmm. So if someone else is going through that, I want to apply that
right.
to help them.
Yeah.
Could be any number of things. And it's so, it can be, you mentioned your example is a big thing, right? It can be small, silly things where this practice of help. So I'll just give a silly example even from the office, right? We had our trash can was overflowing the one day. Sherry, our administrator, we were in there together. I saw, like, it gets this trash out, picking it up. And it's one of these garbage bags, right? It's got kind of the four corners,
mm-hmm.
and we don't have ties in there. And so I'm taking this out, you know, and I'm like, you know, I know there's some method somebody taught me for how to tie these well, and Sherry's describing it. And I'm not doing it well. And I, at that point, there was a part of me that's sitting there saying, I should be able to do this. You do it. You're man. Figure it out, you know. And there was another part of me that just said, and this is what I said in the moment, was like, maybe you should just do this. And sure enough, Sherry took it and just tied it off. And I watched, and I probably learned more watching her do it mm-hmm. than me, you know, trying to do that and getting frustrated about it. But that's just one of those moments of, hey, why don't you just help and do this?
Yeah, it doesn't have to be a big thing, but it can be super. And the small things are what cultivate it so that when the big things happen, you are ready and able to do it. It's mm-hmm. practice.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if I'd been able to practice my my humility, my vulnerability as much as I had, if the immigration stuff happened right now, I would feel so much less, it wouldn't feel as shameful to pull back, to go and ask for all of that help. I'd be much more willing and ready to do that because I'd practiced with all those little things the whole way through.
Mm. And you know, for everybody listening too, you're going to know this as well. There are some people in our lives that it's harder to ask help from than others.
Uh-huh.
And some of it's attached to shameful experiences we've had in the past with them. And some of it's just these weird, the closeness and family even. we get in these patterns, these dynamics. And so we have to acknowledge that too. And that the barrier will be a little higher at times to get over that, to say, you know, it's not me being less than to ask this person for help. You know, that's letting other things from the past drive us from maybe going forward in a better way.
Right.
But that is the reality. I bet each one listening would know that too, that, oh, this person I have a hard time asking for help from. So,
and if you can identify those people, as I'm sure you can, there's a great way to, you know, work on that. Start doing these very small things,
mm-hmm.
just
mm-hmm.
very small moments of submission and asking questions.
Right.
It'll go a long way.
And again, let's not forget our foundation. When we are humbly submitting before the Lord, it helps us practice this as well, because we know, one, he's in charge of everything he's providing, and we're also our identities with him, not any of these other relationships mm-hmm. either. So,
absolutely.
But yeah, we want to practice it.
Yes, 100%. So, Dan, what is coming up? I know next week we've got Tim. He's finishing up his last sermon here on Friendship.
Yeah, his kind of farewell series here. And I know, understandably, he's feeling the weight of that. You know, what do I say? And how do I possibly put this into words? So, but we're looking forward to that. I'm sure it'll be a special time of worship. And as we consider his kind of farewell and all that.
Mm-hmm.
After that, we're going to be still in the season of Lent, but we're going to do more of a series together then, starting the first Sunday in March. And so this series, kind of, Were You There?, getting into some of the perspectives of those who were there around these scenes of Jesus' arrest and trial and crucifixion, and just thinking for ourselves, too, that we often have these kind of reactions or perspectives also. So, for example, mm-hmm. the first week we'll be at Jesus' arrest when he's being arrested. Peter has the reaction to pull out the sword and try to fight, and then at the end all the other disciples run away, flight, and just acknowledging when it comes to Jesus and our reactions to him, we often have those reactions too. Sometimes we want to fight for Jesus, and other times we just kind of are backpedaling really quickly, and how really neither of those are kind of what Jesus is honoring is right. the right response.
Right.
And so just that's kind of getting into some of that along the way. So
all right.
thinking of the crowd and how easily we're swayed about opinions of Jesus, or one with the women there kind of just faithfully being there, but also lamenting. And sometimes we're looking at Jesus, we're there with him, but we're also, what are you doing? And this is sad, what's happening in my life or the world. So those are just some of the examples of, I hope, is a good connection for our own experiences with the Lord and following him too.
Awesome. Good. Well, I'm looking forward to all of that. Thank you, Dan, again, for coming on. Thank you, everyone, for listening. And we will be back next week.